Ships at Sea.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts. The Montevilla Jazz Festival showcases the best of Portland-based artists, including the Alan Jones Sextet, the Ed Bennett Quintet, Machete Order, and Portland Jazz Composers Ensemble, and many more. Again, that's the Montevilla Jazz Festival, Saturday, August 15th, and Sunday, August 16th at Portland Metro Arts, 9003 Southeast Stark Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Well, good morning. This is Per Fograng, and the show is Fight the Empire. And I'm going to start out today with a quote from the German playwright Friedrich Schiller. It goes like this: Mit der Dummheit kämpfen Götter selbst vergebens. Translated, that means, against stupidity, the gods themselves contend in vain. That was Friedrich Schiller, and that comes from his play, The Maid of Orleans, which is about Joan of Arc. And that play itself was one of his, I suppose, his most popular play, but itself was kind of, had some elements of Dummheit in it. It was very militaristic, which I guess suited the times. This is came out right around 1800 or so, just before Napoleon rose to power. But anyway, it was at the end, it had this finale, which is totally unhistorical, where Joan of Arc breaks out of her prison cell and saves the day against the British or something like that. The quote itself is very interesting. Against stupidity, the gods and gods themselves struggle in vain. Well, what does this mean? It means that there's something about stupidity, or maybe you should call it folly. Maybe folly is a better word. That is very ingrained in somehow in human nature. You know, I mean, humans are very clever and all that, but there's something about human nature that has some kind of destructive impulse in it. And the evidence for that would be all the empires and civilizations that have arisen and collapsed in the past. I think about 23 or 24 major civilizations in human history, and all of them have crumbled and collapsed, with the exception of ours, which is in the process right now, we might say. And when I say our civilization, I'm including starting, say, with when Columbus came upon the Americas and immediately began enslaving the native population. And so that was a European venture. There were several European countries that had empires in what they were pleased to call the New World. And now that empire has been sort of taken over by the United States, not in the same form. We don't directly rule these countries anymore, not all of them anyway, but we sort of exercise our domination in many ways. So we might ask, why have all these empires fallen? The people who built those empires were not stupid. You know, the Romans, for example, they were terrific engineers. They built all kinds of monuments and aqueducts and roads that are, some of them are still in use today. And I think they invented a form of concrete, which was revolutionary for the times. It allowed them to build these domes and things like that. And some say that the Roman concrete is actually better than ours, that what we call Portland cement kind of disintegrates after, I don't know, 50, 100 years or so, and where this Roman concrete, it's still around. So why did these intelligent people, lose their power and collapse? Well, the usual people who study this kind of history, they point to one thing is what they call imperial overreach. You know, empires expand and expand and expand. They sort of keep on going under their own momentum. And eventually they expand a little too much, and they're not able to maintain what they have conquered. One example would be the Roman Empire. There were stories of Roman legions that were being shuttled back and forth from one hot spot on the edge of the empire to another, and eventually it wore them down. So imperial overreach is one cause of the collapse. And we might sort of flash forward. Here's a United States with something like, 800, 900,000 different kinds of military bases all around the world, and fighting all these wars around the world and looking for more. At least some of the people are. And we might call that overreach, and it's going to, I think it'll do us in. Another thing you might say would be debt overreach. Economist Michael Hudson called finance the new battleground, that is sort of war on a different level. And people might remember that that really great book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman by John Perkins, in which he tells how his job working for a corporation that was apparently a CIA front, and his job was to go around convincing rulers around the world, they call third world rulers, to take these huge loans, which they could spend on themselves or on their countries or whatever. But the effect of these loans would be to tie these countries into the American hegemony. And we see that right now where this debts have grown. And we see an example in Greece where they have taken on much more debt. These debts will not be repaid. That's pretty clear to everybody. These debts were not just the result of greedy Greeks borrowing money. These loans were kind of pushed on them by greedy corporations. Goldman Sachs is probably the number one. And so the debtors are being punished. The lenders have been punished to some degree. They've taken a little bit of what they call a haircut. They've had to kind of give up some of their loans, but they're still doing quite well, and they want to squeeze the last bit out of the Greek people. So you might call that debt overreach, and we are having that similar problem right here with Puerto Rico, because Puerto Rico is not a state, it's not a free country, it's sort of a colony, it's called the Commonwealth, and because of the rules of the game, Puerto Rico owes a lot of money that was kind of put in there by corporations looking for tax breaks and things, and they are now in a position where they are not able to really go bankrupt or do anything. The usual remedy when a person or a company or whatever is in debt that they can't pay, they declare bankruptcy. A court goes over all the numbers and everything and figures, well, how much, what will it take to keep this corporation going or this person going? What will they have to give up? What will the lenders have to give up? So, but Puerto Rico cannot do that. And finally, another thing that's been talked about as the one of the causes of imperial collapse is just plain old hubris, sort of arrogance, the feeling that that the empire knows best. And you might recall that in Vietnam, it was the quote, the best and the brightest that planned that war, that got us into that disastrous war. These were guys from Ivy League universities, the Bundy brothers and others who, you know, they thought they were really very smart people. After all, they graduated with high honors from Ivy League universities. They had to be smart. And they thought they knew all about the world and that they were wise enough to kind of manipulate things, to sort of play God, as it were. And they brought us a disaster. Now, that was back in the 60s, until 75. But before that, there was this whole thing with China. Got several weeks ago, I interviewed author James Bradley, who wrote a tremendous book. I really recommend it. It's called The China Mirage. And this book is about China's history with the West. And he writes that for most of human history, China was the richest nation in the world. It was the most powerful nation in the world. Then they were brought down in the early 1800s by the what they call the Opium Wars. The deal was that China was so self-sufficient they didn't really feel the need to trade with other countries. They had everything they needed at home. And the British Empire in particular, they wanted Chinese tea. And they needed something that they could sell to the Chinese. And so they hit upon opium. And they actually forced it on China. The U.S. got into the act. In fact, James Bradley's book, The China Mirage, goes into detail how President Franklin Delano Roosevelt's grandfather, a man named Warren Delano, was one of the big drug pushers back in the 1800s, made his fortune out of pushing opium on the Chinese. Well, this destroyed China as a nation. It brought down the economy. It kind of wreaked havoc among the population. And the Western powers, they moved in. They set up what they call their own little settlements. And these were kind of like places where they did business, and they were sort of immune to Chinese laws and everything else. And they were kind of like a little imperial, like little mini colonies, which they kind of ruled the whole nation. And at the same time, you had missionaries, American missionaries were in China. And they were pushing this idea that the Chinese really wanted American development, American and American religion, that the Chinese were thirsting for Christianity, which is not true at all, but the missionaries sincerely believed this, and they sort of foisted this idea on the great diplomatic minds of the time, who also came from Ivy League universities. And so you had this idea that China was just wanted to be, wanted to be our kind of, not our lackey exactly, but kind of they wanted to be our junior partner, I suppose you could call it. Well, it led to a whole lot of things. It led to the U.S. supporting Chiang Kai-shek in the Chinese Civil War, ignoring Mao Zedong, and it led to, actually, eventually, Chiang Kai-shek's nationalist forces fleeing China in 1949, taking up residence on Taiwan. And but these were the diplomats. It's an amazing book. It goes into great detail about how these diplomats got us into war with Japan, how they tried to finagle everything. They really had the belief that they knew best for China and Japan, and that by manipulating things, they could kind of, that they were smart enough to do this. Well, it turned out to be a big disaster. So those are the examples where these empires and civilizations have crumbled because of a kind of a stupidity, or you may, you could say it's that one theory is that the reason for this is that that psychopathic personalities tend to rise to the top in lots of different professions. And a psychopathic personality is not necessarily a violent person. A psychopathic personality is someone who might be very charming, who really has no conscience. That seems to be the hallmark. No conscience and no feeling of empathy, but great charm and very clever and grandiose ideas. And, you might say that in any kind of political situation, psychopaths tend to rise to the top. And this is kind of, the psychopaths themselves are not very wise. They may be very smart and very clever at getting their own way and manipulating things, but when it comes to wisdom, and they're really lacking. And you might say that, well, but what about the people? Somehow the people allow the psychopaths to rule. You know, most people are not psychopathic, but somehow they allow the psychopaths to rule, and this is what has brought down 23 out of the last 24 great civilizations. So, but underneath that, there's something more basic going on, and I want to recommend another book. This is called Topsoil and Civilization. And it was written back in the 50s by two soil scientists who had an interest in history. Their names are Vernon Gill Carter and Tom Dale. And they wrote this book back in the 50s, and then it was kind of revised and updated in the 70s. Topsoil and Civilization. And basically their whole idea was that that these civilizations, and they start with Mesopotamia and go on through the Mediterranean, Greece, Rome, Europe, that they all fell because they depleted their soil. Well, there's nothing more basic than dirt. And that's what these great civilizations did while they were conquering and sending armies around the world and looting other captive nations. They were neglecting their soil, or actually destroying their soil, and eventually they were barely able to feed themselves. And one example would be Rome. At one time, North Africa was considered Rome's breadbasket. They grew wheat that was shipped off to Rome to feed the people, to give them the bread to go along with their circuses. And you look at North Africa today, and it certainly is not any kind of a breadbasket. It's kind of like approaching desert. Some places it is a desert. And like there are in Tunisia, there is a ruins of a city with a stadium, an amphitheater, and everything that had at one time that city served something like 50,000 people lived there. Now it's out there in the out there in this semi-desert, and it's just what happened. Well, they depleted their soil, and it brought about the collapse of the Roman Empire, or contributed to it. And one final observation on that is that all these previous empires were not global. They were large. They covered a lot of territory, but they were not global. But our civilization, our empire, is global. It finally, humanity has finally come to the point where we have the entire world, pretty much the entire world, in this global system. And when this global system collapses, which I think it will, it's in the process of happening right now, that everybody kind of collapses with it. Now, one thing to say here is that collapse does not have to be overnight. Does not have to be some sort of a Mad Max scenario or barbarians tearing down walls and looting and everything. Sometimes collapses take decades. You know, it's a process. So that is what's happening, and here in America, in the United. I shouldn't call it America, because when you say America, we mean two continents, North America and South America. What we live in is the United States of America, which is just a part of this hemisphere. But the U.S. was once at the cutting edge of civilization. You know, we had this vast territory, we had cheap oil, we had the profits from slavery, we had all sorts of we once did have terrific topsoil, grew crops and everything, and we were kind of at the cutting edge of what they call civilization. But the world has changed since then. There are rivals for in our economic sphere. Our topsoil is being depleted. Our waters are being depleted, and so we are definitely past our peak. We no longer have cheap oil the way we once did. And a good example of that would be in Pennsylvania. The first commercial oil well was drilled in 1859, and they struck oil at 69 feet. And then since then, you know, you had these big oil gushers in Texas and Oklahoma that you've seen in movies. You drill down, and the oil is under great pressure, comes roaring out of the ground up, you know, with a big plume of oil 100 feet high. Well, that was easy. That was the easy oil. Now you have, you drill underground, under the ocean. You go into fracking, and they're talking, you know, and now they want to drill the Arctic. Which is a totally insane idea. Talk about stupidity rules. The idea of drilling in the Arctic is a great example of that. The only people with the smarts are the people who are fighting this ruinous sort of debacle in the making. So the world has changed, but somehow you listen to our politicians. They really don't. They're living in the past. They're living in a past where the U.S. was in the forefront of quote progress, and that is no longer true. If you listen tonight, if you want to hear some Dummheit on parade, I suppose tune into this debate among the Republican presidential candidates, and you will hear an awful lot of Dummheit. I can guarantee it. And they will be talking about, they want to go to war with Iran. They think all the wars we've had so far are not enough for them. All the failures we've had are not enough. They want more. And so it's like we're going out in a blaze of glory. And you look at the technology sphere. You know, we have all, you know, they have the smartphones. We have all kinds of technology. And very grand and gaudy stuff. And meanwhile, the basics, the soil and the water, are dying. You have here in California, home of Google and all that Google technology, the whole state of California is reverting back to desert. So you have droughts and forest fires. And you have the soil is vanishing, and in the ocean has become acidified, and you have this situation where all the plastics that we make that go into landfills, and a lot of it gets washed out into the sea. And what happens is that these little plastic cups and bottles and this and that, they disintegrate in the ocean, but they don't disappear. They get broken down into tiny little fragments, and along comes some of the sea life, and they eat this plastic. And they found dead fish that the contents of their stomach are maybe 75 or 80% ground up plastic. Well, it's like this plastic is getting into our whole seafood chain. And guess where it's going to go? I mean, it goes further up the chain and sea life disappears. Well, there we are. So we have all this wonderful technology, and we're neglecting the basics of just clean soil and water. We talk about colonizing Mars while the Earth becomes more Martian all the time. Well, you can say life will go on, and that is certainly true. The lesson is that life may go on, but maybe without people. That is very possible. Well, if we look around the world today, we can see all kinds of signs of disintegration. We saw all these wars. The war party still has a lot of power in the United States, although I think it looks to me, maybe I'm wrong, that President Obama, in his own way, is trying to kind of fight back a little bit against the war party. Although he's kind of implicated in it himself to some degree, but he has this agreement with Iran, which Israel and the Israeli lobby is fighting against, the Republicans and the so-called Christian Zionists, who sort of make up a great deal of the war party, are fighting. And so we have... the neocons who have got us into one war after another. We go back to Afghanistan, where we gave al-Qaeda its little first little nudge against the Soviet Union. We thought we could control them. Well, little did we know, we are not controlling them. Al-Qaeda has kind of morphed into Islamic State, and who knows where it's going to go from there. We have the overthrow of Gaddafi in Libya. Look at the mess Libya's in now. We have Syria. The U.S. doesn't know which side to back there. We don't like Bashar Assad, although the CIA used him at one time. And so, we have all these great wars that have turned out to be total disasters, but the people who perpetrated these wars are still given credence in Washington. They are still listened to, respect, and they're trying to get us into another war. They're trying it in Ukraine, which has turned out to be a big failure. And so... Go back to Friedrich Schiller. Mit der Dummheit kämpfen Götter selbstvergebens. Against stupidity, the gods themselves struggle in vain. Well, the gods are sort of temporal gods. The people who live in Washington and run our foreign policy, they may think they are gods. They act like gods, but they certainly don't have any godlike wisdom. They have this kind of hubris or arrogance or perhaps psychopathic inclinations, and they have been getting us into one horrible disaster after another for many, many years. We can go way back, but they are still at it. They are still recorded great respect, and they are doing their utmost right now to get us into another disaster. So having said that, tune into the debate tonight and listen to what those guys have to say, and see if you can detect a little or a lot of plain old Dummheit. Thank you very much for listening, and stay tuned.
And thank you, Pear. Fight the Empire on KBOO Portland. couple minutes in front of 10 o'clock, and a reminder that Air Cascadia is off today. Instead, we're going to head on into an hour-long Flashpoints Investigative News Radio with host Dennis Bernstein coming right up. At 11 today on Between the Covers, host David Naiman speaks with the award-winning writer Rebecca Mackay, whose stories have appeared in four consecutive editions of the Best American Short Stories, about her new collection, Music for Wartime. And at 11, Patricia Welch, O.B. Hill, and Emma Jackson Ford host Black Book Talk, a monthly program featuring interviews and discussions of works by African American authors. That is coming up. Thanks for listening to KBOO, and thanks KBOO members for your generous support. If you are not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate today. Stick around. We've got Flashpoints right after this.
KBOO Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of the Portland Rising Film Festival, August 14th and 15th at the Clinton Street Theater in Portland. The Portland Rising Film Festival will spotlight animation, transmedia, feature-length, and short films to highlight the wide range of new media content. Films include Sid Yiddish, The Girl Who Loved Animals, The Shattered Mind, and more. There will also be workshops and presentations to educate and entertain on the art and science of filmmaking. Again, that's the Portland Rising Film Festival, August 14th and 15th at the Clinton Street Theater, 2522 Southeast Clinton Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Today on Flashpoints. In an unprecedented move of censorship, the Los Angeles Times fires its renowned political cartoonist Ted Rall after pressure from the Los Angeles Police Department. Then we take a closer look at the upcoming Republican